There are people getting paid. Their names are mentioned for other jobs, and they get paid. Mark Stoops is the latest. He has agreed in principle to a contract extension at Kentucky through at least 2027. Josh is sifting through his contract. Suffice it to say, at a basketball school, the football coach is going to be paid very well not to go to Oklahoma, where his name had been mentioned. So now Oklahoma's probably going to have to overpay for the guy they want, or they'll get the guy they want, but it's going to cost them a little bit more. Will this become a trend? I think the number of openings will be, but will the money? We welcome in somebody who has dabbled in this kind of money before, and that's the reason that he ended up at KATV. Matt Foster joins us. Is this good? What has happened in the last couple of days, and what has happened in like the last month with salaries of coaches in college football? Is it good for the sport, or is it someone else's money?
Well, Gary, first off, I'll say you and I definitely chose the the wrong career path, apparently.
Yes, we did.
That includes buyouts, by the way. You know, I think it's – I don't know if it's completely indicative of where coaching hires are going to go. I think this is just one of those weird windows where you have so many major openings for programs. You know, when was the last time you saw two blue bloods at the same time, basically, in college football have had coach openings? And now some of these have been, you know, the domino effect with Riley leaving and Oklahoma needs a coach, Notre Dame, LSU, et cetera. But smaller schools, they're simply not going to have the money to kind of offer those kind of contracts, which is why I think you saw, like in Michigan State's case, they tried to get out ahead of the postseason hiring frenzy and basically put all their chips on the table for Mel Tucker. Well, if that decision pans out, we'll have to wait and see. Same with kind of Penn State going 10-year extension with James Franklin. I think you might see more of the major programs offering longer extensions because they don't want to find themselves in a spot where they lose a top-tier coach and then their options for filling that job aren't exactly up to par for what they're looking for.
Is it admirable that the Big Ten doesn't seem to get caught up in all these coaching carousel cycles year after year?
I would say yes. I mean, a lot of the programs in the Big Ten, they're very much, we want to stick with this guy through up and down unless it's really just not working. I mean, Lovie Smith had several years in Illinois despite not having good football, and they stuck with him until they just really couldn't. You know, you look at Scott Frost. They want to make it work at Nebraska with him despite the record that he's had. Pat Fitzgerald has had, I think I saw a stat, Northwestern was the first team to ever go from first to last to first to last in their division in a four-year span. But I think there's a lot of trust with these programs and their head coaches, and stability is so important to a program's long-term success. And if you're bringing in a new coach every 2-3 years and different staffs and different systems, it's tough to kind of build a program.
Also seems there's a lot of stability in the power chair. Now, we haven't seen that in Lincoln, but if you look throughout the Big Ten, there's a lot of athletic directors that have been there now for 5, 6, 7, all the way up to Gene Smith and, of you know, most recently Barry Alvarez. But, like, for example, your home state school, Wisconsin, like, couldn't Paul Chryst just be the head coach at Wisconsin forever? I mean, if he just continues to win 7, 8, 9, has that 1 year every 3 years or so where he gets 10, but he's going to Indianapolis on a regular basis, can he just stay the head coach for the rest of his career?
I would say no, because they do have a new athletic director. So I think, you know, similar to Scott with Trev, it's a different viewpoint. he was not, you know, Trev was not the AD that hired Scott. Chris McIntosh was not the AD that hired Paul Chris. Mm-hmm. And if you, if it gets to a stagnant level where you're not really seeing improvement in the program, and you, you know, can kind of gauge where the fan base is at, it's not always going to be good enough, per se. And, mm-hmm. you know, I do warn Wisconsin to not be, you know, hasty when you do make a decision like that, because I know there are some Nebraska fans that, you know, wish they could go back to, you know, the 9 wins every year. Even if Pelini wasn't the most popular coach, you at least knew you were going to get 8 to 9 wins every year. So it's kind of walking that fine line of where do you see this program? How high do you think it can reach? Mm-hmm. And is this coach going to be the right person to take you to that level that you think this program is capable of getting to?
You make an interesting point, because I think this is, let's bring this back to Nebraska. And I'm looking at the rest of the West Division. How many times do you hear openly, either the head coach or the athletic director, they kind of spell out what the expectations are for a program? I mean, do we know exactly what the vision and expectations are for Nebraska football?
You know, that's tough. And obviously, when Frost's new deal was announced and the whole metrics-based, you know, objectives that were supposed to be hit, and when Andy Kendi sat down with Trev recently, he specifically asked him about that, but Trev said that's one of those things is almost kept in-house. So it is kind of tough to know exactly at this point with Nebraska what the objectives you want to see are. Obviously, I think the first thing is getting back to a bowl game. I think that should be top of the list, is showing, you know, getting back on the right path. Because getting to a bowl game is good for a variety of reasons. You know, it's another game of football for your program to get better. It always helps to get extra national exposure. And if you win that game, that builds momentum heading into the offseason. And then start from there, start to consistently beat your in-division teams, and then get back to winning a division title. You can't take it all at once. It's got to be, you know, one thing at a time. Because if you try and do too many things at a time, you're just going to stumble, and then you're back to square one.
And that's why I caution people to not sift through the 22 schedule and try and figure out. I mean, there is no where Nebraska football is at. There's no, okay, they'll win. They got Northwestern. They got Illinois. I mean, wait for 270 days before the game in Dublin. But with that said, there's no change at the top. There's going to be 4 new assistant coaches. The results from this past season, they speak for themselves. You can do whatever you want with the data, but it all comes back to the 3-9. If you look at this team, and you know, some spots they're going to lose some key players. Other spots that were encouraging, there are not many guys that are leaving, and so there's at least something that you can build on. What would you say going into this offseason is something Nebraska has to build off of into 22? That's something that was consistent, or at least was a spark in this season, that is not going to be in a position group or an element of their game that'll be decimated by attrition, that at least they can build off, and it might actually turn into a strength to begin next year.
If I had to specifically pick out a position group, at least, I'm going to say linebacker play. Look at, you know, Garrett Nelson back, Luke Reimer back, Nick Henrich back. I would imagine Chris Kolarovic plays a bigger role next year. Isaac Gifford will move into that JoJo Doman role. Maybe they get a transfer portal guy like they did with Kolarovic. Javon Wright, I know, was a guy that they were high on coming out of spring ball, but I think he's dealt with injuries and blood clots, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. So if he can kind of get back past those, I know they were high on him. Caleb Tanner finished the season strong, and I believe he'll be he'll be coming back. He didn't walk on senior day. And I'm pretty sure I saw a stat that this was the lowest points per game total that their defense has given up since joining the Big Ten. In a year where they faced three Big Ten teams that were in the top 15 at the time of playing them, some of the best offenses, both passing and on the ground, and their run defense especially. Wisconsin game aside, and, you know, didn't have JoJo, didn't have Damian, they've been really good against some of the top running backs. So if you can continue to build on that momentum of the defense, keeping it to lower scoring games, then you don't have to worry about an offense that has to go out there and put up 30-plus a game.
All right, so you know what then the response is? Well, that was the defense carried Nebraska until they hit a wall this past season. Can you give me something on offense? If I pose this question to you, what is there to build off of as a positive for 22 on the offensive side of the ball? Where would you start?
You know, that is a tough question all around, because you lose Austin Allen and Samori Toure, who were top two targets for Martinez. We still don't know Martinez's status yet of whether he'll stay or fully go. I'd imagine we'll learn soon. Running backs was kind of that revolving door. An offensive line, some of that might depend on, you know, how Teddy Prohaska comes back from injury. How some of those younger guys, if they take that next step up next year. But I think you saw encouraging signs finally getting to see Omar Manning play this year after, you know, dealing with both the physical and mental struggles that he was dealing with. That was, I thought, a big positive to actually see him out on the field this year. And then, you know, you still got a talented tight end room, even without Allen, with Vokalek. Hopefully going to get to see Fedoni fully healthy and actually out on the field. Chancellor Brewington, he tries and kills anyone who's in his way when he's blocking. So that's, you know, that's encouraging. There's pieces on offense that are encouraging, but you don't have the whole puzzle yet.
You know, an area, and you kind of touched on it, that if I'm looking for a job or I'm being courted for a job and my specialty is wide receiver, I think I'm very intrigued by Nebraska's wide receiver room in 2022. Let's say nobody, the people that can leave, their eligibility's expired, they are leaving, which includes Toure, who you'll send him off to the NFL. But if I look at what's left and 22 and guys that either played briefly Brown, Nixon, or redshirted, who they like their redshirted wide receivers, don't you think the wide receiver room, because I would come in and say, okay, I don't know what happened with you and your former wide receiver coach, Xavier Betts or Omar Manning, but I've seen enough. This is what we're going to do. Isn't wide receiver could be an encouraging area for Nebraska in 22 if you get the right person in there to push the right buttons?
Oh, 100%. You know, just dating back to the start of the season, how many times we heard Frost say, this is the most talented wide receiver room they've had since he's been at Nebraska. And I think that can still carry over for sure. You know, you want to see guys like Betts get more touches, because we've seen at various times throughout the season, you get him in space, he's going to take off and he's going to make a play, which we've known he's been capable of if you watched him in his days at Bellevue West. Still got Oliver Martin coming back, as far as I'm aware. And we didn't get to see him as much the latter half of the season as I thought maybe we would. Some of that may have to do with that nagging injury that he dealt with after the first week or so of the season. There are certainly talented pieces that go beyond who we saw play this year. You mentioned Alante Brown, Will Nixon. I know they like Kamonte Grimes, who didn't see the field this year. Latrell Neville is a big body. So there are guys that are younger that have the talent, But you do have to bring in the right guy that's going to take that talent to the next level and make those pieces fit.
Well, and I think some of, and we may, this is kind of the unknown, is there may be guys that had beef with their former position coach and they just got on the wrong side, and so they could never get on their good side, that they've got a fresh slate. And it may untap some things that we did not see in 21. And all of a sudden we'll go, oh, wow, I knew that guy was good. Where was he last year? And it's just because he has a new set of eyeballs and a new voice that is in his ear and a new relationship. And so they can bury the hatchet from the past and they start anew.
100%. Sometimes, you know, when you do have a new coach come in, if you're a guy that, you know, felt slighted by their former coach by not getting enough playing time, you feel motivated to be like, oh, I need to show this coach why I deserve to be out on the field. If you're a guy that has a good relationship with the former coach, but you got a new guy in, you still should be motivated to say, oh, I need to go show this guy why I was out there and why I should continue to be out there. So hopefully it's one of those iron sharpens iron type situations, where new blood, fresh faces, helps bring out the best in the talent in that room.
All right, we'll get you out on this. This is your chance to make a bold prediction. Will Nebraska and Creighton both be playing volleyball next week in the Sweet 16 in either Pittsburgh or Austin, Texas?
I would say yes to both. I think actually Nebraska has the easier matchups of the first two rounds. And I say that because Ole Miss is honestly a tough first-round draw for Creighton. Despite being a national seed, Ole Miss has been pretty good this year. And then if Creighton wins, you know, there's the potential of playing an Oregon team, which is
really good,
ranked in the current AVCA poll in the top 20, I believe. They might be ranked ahead of Creighton currently, actually, despite not being seeded as high as Creighton. Nebraska, they should take care of business against Campbell. I'd be surprised if they don't. And then they've already played Kansas State once this year. And that was first 2 weeks of the season. And they took care of them. Florida State could get past Kansas State as well. But I think of the two teams, Creighton will have the bigger challenge to get to the second weekend. But they've been playing such good volleyball over the last month or so. They're the only team in college volleyball with 30 wins at the moment, and their defense has been spectacular. So I'm going to say expect to see both teams in the second weekend, because I think they've been two of the best 16 teams in the country this year.
It should be a fun run to Columbus. Matt, as always, I appreciate it. You guys are nice and busy. It'll be I know we got a double dip of basketball tonight and high school basketball starting. So as always, we appreciate your time. Fine work, my friend.
Thanks, Gary. Talk to you soon.
And so Matt Foster. Creighton didn't get any favor. I mean, they're number 8 in the RPI. They got Oregon coming to Sokol. Oregon's really, really good. Now, they would face them in the next round. Nebraska needs to stop talking about playing Texas and Austin. I mean, if you get to the Sweet 16 for Nebraska, I mean, 3 of the 4 semifinalists could be playing in Austin. That would, I mean, Texas doesn't have an easy road to Columbus, but Nebraska's got to get through Florida State. I think Florida State will beat Kansas State. But Oregon being in Omaha, that's not a favor to Creighton, but it'll be a good test. But then on the backside, I don't think there's any guarantee that Pittsburgh will make it to the Sweet 16. I mean, Penn State is sitting right there. They're not the Penn State of old. It's a good bracket. And it may all go chalk, and the top 4 teams that are really, really good in college volleyball this year, they all have a little party, you know, Louisville, Wisconsin, Texas, and I even think a dark horse, Purdue. Get to Columbus. But I would be surprised. I think Nebraska and Creighton are both good enough to work their way through 2 matches on their home floor to get through next week. All right, Tom Chattel from World Herald's coming up in the last hour of a Tuesday edition of the Gary Sharp Show. Great stuff today, everybody. We got lots of great discussion going on air and on social media. Still some things out there. We're going to circle back. We'll pose this right to Tom, because he's going to vote as well with yours truly. the MVP of this team. Plus, what makes a good hire in college football these days? What makes a good hire in college football? That's coming up next on the Gary Sharp Show on 1620 The Zone.